Good morning, ladies. It's my pleasure to introduce today's speaker. If we could just settle down a little bit and take our places before today's speaker. Today we have Stacy Denherter with us. Stacy earned her bachelor's degree in political science from Montana State University, and she then attended law school at California Western School of Law. After serving as an intern for the city attorney's office and for a firm that practices state litigation, she opened her own firm, Denherter & Associates. As her practice grew, so did her family, and with the births of her two sons, she quickly recognized that she wanted to devise a personal estate plan that reflected she and her husband's ethics and morals. That realization revolutionized the way her law firm practiced law, and they became counselors to help clients put their life into their estate plan. Stacy's passion lies in counseling and educating families on the options available to them and ways they can, through giving and planning, enjoy a prosperous life and leave a lasting legacy. She also counsels multi-generational families through the dynamics of wealth transfer from one generation to the next. Stacy also hosts a daily radio program on 1210 AM KPRZ called Wisdom, Wealth, and Purpose. In addition to her practice and radio program, Stacy has given estate planning seminars all over California. She's graciously agreed to share her wisdom with us today. So please join me in welcoming Stacy Denherter.
Okay, thank you so very much. And great hospitality. That food was wonderful. Thank you for everyone who brought that. And you've all been so nice. So I really enjoyed meeting those of you I met. As Michelle said, I have been an estate planning attorney. I'm going on 22 years, and we have a firm in Scripps Ranch. These are the members of our firm, and it's full-service estate planning. So we not only do planning, but we help when somebody dies. We help with trust administration, probate, conservatorship, and guardianship. We also offer fiduciary services where we will serve as trustee for people when they have families that will blow up otherwise. And so we do some of that. And you'll be talking a little bit today about that. I'm going to go through this pretty quickly today. I want to get to the best information, so some of it I'm going to talk at lightning speed for you. I always use this slide in every presentation I do of blessed, just simply because I am so in awe of how blessed we are, the fact that we were even born in this country. When you think about people in the world that are struggling to just have food to eat or clean water, and isn't that amazing? And then we've got our families and our health and everything else, and it's worth protecting. So that's what we do. I'm introducing you to my family. This was years ago. My husband, Chuck, now he is a financial advisor and has worked with me in the firm for years. He manages our firm from the financial side. This is my son, Karsten. He's 15, and Corey is 19, so a little bit beyond where the majority of you are. And life is awesome. So much fun, but we do deal with those sexting issues, and we deal with girls calling, boys. You know, he did his iOS 7 update, not this one, the 15-year-old, and we share the same Apple ID, and all of a sudden I got every one of his text messages, and it was horrifying. And I just have to tell you, as a mom, you have to kind of pray through that and then decide how you're going to handle that and shut it off quickly, because you really don't want to know what your 15-year-old, you do, but you know what I mean? There's just some things. So we'll have another discussion on that when you want to invite me back for technology and how to protect yourself from your children and what you find out. All right. So we are all expected to be excellent managers of everything that we have been given. And she's handing out handouts, and we haven't gotten to where the handout is, but then we'll be there in just a second. So we are expected to manage our children and our families, to take care of our health and our liberty. And so how do we do that? And we do it through planning. And the type of planning I'm going to talk about today has two components. What happens if you're incapacitated, and then what happens when you are gone? So who inherits? And that's called estate planning, or planning your estate. Basically, when we're talking about an estate, a lot of people think they don't have an estate. But an estate is everything you own. It can be your personal possessions, your home, your retirement accounts, your bank and investment accounts, life insurance, everything. I do have a couple of little soapboxes, and one of them I'm going to get on right now is life insurance, because I see that a lot of people aren't adequately covered. And in what I do for a living, I see the worst case scenarios. And one of my really good friends, he died at age 45 of a massive heart attack in the kitchen. He went downstairs to go walk the dog, and his wife took a shower, and she came downstairs, and he was dead on the kitchen floor. And he was a lawyer, and he had been sold an insurance policy that was a $200,000 permanent life insurance. But by the time he retired, because he was going to be putting so much money into it, it was going to grow to $1 million. But here he was, 45 years old, and all it had was a $200,000 death benefit. And you just, $200,000 isn't a lot of money. And she had been a stay-at-home mom for the past 12 years, and all of a sudden they found themselves, you know, with a mortgage, with all their toys, all financed, and her having to go back to work and start out at 10 bucks an hour while her kids had to struggle over the loss and then mom working. And it was just a disaster. And so I really encourage everyone to look at that. One thing I see often is that the working spouse may have $1 million in life insurance, but the stay-at-home spouse has nothing. And if you really think about that, you don't want to have, you know, if God forbid you're the stay-at-home spouse and you get sick and your husband uses up his family leave to take care of you, you die, he has to go back to work. Now your kids lost one parent to death and another to work, and it's a horrible path they go down. So my rule of thumb, everyone should have $1 million of term life insurance coverage. It's the cheapest kind of insurance you can get. I don't sell it. You know, I am now 49 years old, but I guess when I was 44, I got a new $1 million term policy, and it costs me $550 a year at 45. So that's not much, you know, to think about the peace of mind that comes with that. So just to give you an idea, so please be sure you think about that and make sure that you're covered. I'd much rather you have the money to cover your family than to do estate planning. You know, if it came down to cost, you know, which one are you going to do? Get that taken care of first. All right, so who needs estate planning? I'm going to tell you everybody does. There are three types of estate planning. First, and by far the most prevalent, is none. The statistics say that 70% of the American population has no estate plan. They have no will, no trust, they've done nothing. If you do nothing, the state of California has decided for you what's going to happen, and we'll talk about that. You'll go through probate. The second most common form of estate planning is the use of a will, and we'll talk about wills and what they can do for you and what they don't, and then finally the use of a trust. So what happens if you do nothing? Well, first there's distribution problems. You know, if you have a situation where I had a client who, I got a call from this woman just panicked. She was following an ambulance. Her grandmother had just had, her mother had just had a massive heart attack. And in the throes of the heart attack, she handed her daughter my card and said, call Stacy. So she's driving behind the ambulance and she calls my office and said, my mother just handed me your card. She just had a heart attack. We need you to take care of things. So I rushed and met them at the hospital, and she was still able to speak. And she had a situation where she had a prior family, and that sounds bad, but she had kids from a previous relationship that she hadn't seen in over 45 years. And then she had her two daughters that are adults now, and they were everything to her. And she wanted to leave everything to these two. So I rushed back to the office, drafted up something for her to sign, and rushed back to the hospital. And she didn't want to sign it yet because she was afraid if she did, she'd die, was what it came down to. And then she did. So that means everything she had went four equal ways instead of to whom she wanted. And if she had just put it in writing as to who she wanted to inherit, then it would have gone exactly where she wanted. So if you do nothing, you can have distribution problems and who gets what. There are fees and taxes mainly through probate. And probate is a court process of transferring assets out of your individual name to the name of your heirs. So I'm going to use a scenario of, let's say you're married and you own a home. So both of you are on title to the deed on your house. If I want to buy your home from you, you have to sign the deed over to me in order for me to take title. If, on the other hand, I'm your daughter and you leave a will that says when we die, we leave our home to our daughter. Well, you two can pass away. I, as your daughter, can pick up the will, show everyone I want. I'm supposed to get the house. But title's still in your name. And there's no way to get it from your name into my name now because you're dead, except through a court proceeding. That's probate. In California, that process takes between 9 months and 2 years to complete. So during that time, the assets are tied up. We can petition the court to release assets, but that costs money. Probate fees are based on the gross value of the asset. So if that home is worth $600,000, but you have a mortgage of $400,000, so you only have $200,000 equity, you're still charged probate fees on the full $600,000. And you can estimate that fee at 4% of the gross value. So it costs $24,000 approximately just to transfer your home from your name to whomever it is you want to inherit. So it can be expensive. It also offers no privacy. And when wills are admitted to probate, it is an open proceeding. Anyone can go down to the court and see who died, who inherited, how much was left behind. And then there's businesses that unfortunately prey on people at a time when they're grieving to sell them things they don't need and all kinds of things that go on with that. So I prefer not to have that in the public arena. So what happens if you do a simple will? Well, if you do a will, you can control the distribution of your estate. So in that example of that client that had the heart attack, if she would have just signed a will that says, I leave everything I own to just these two daughters and not my other children, then it would have all been distributed where she intended. So if she had done a valid will, that would have been taken care of. She could also name an executor who she wants to manage her estate when she's gone, and name guardian for kids. But a will always go through probate. Now, it may not happen if you're married on the first death, depending on how you have title to your assets, but definitely it will on a second death. I would say one of the biggest things, impediments to young families getting their estate planning done is this question of who you choose as guardian, because there's nobody who's as good as you are. And that's a really, really hard decision. So these are some of the things that I put together that I think are the most important in considering. Number one, when you're choosing who you want as your successor guardian, you want to consider their ethics, morals, and values. It may not be your family, because your family may not share your morals and values. And the reality is, if you don't choose, the court chooses for you, and they choose who's closest in blood relationship to you. So one of my most horrific cases in 22 years that we had, these people, I didn't know them when they were alive, but there was a family that was killed in a car accident. Two couples who went out on a date night and were killed in a head-on car collision. And neither of them had done any estate planning, and both sets of families, both couples had kids. So in one family, there were the first in priority would be the parents to the couple. So it'd be like my mom and dad, my husband's mom and dad. But all the parents are divorced. So there were four sets of grandparents, all with equal standing to take the kids. And the grandfather with the least relationship to the kids is the one who petitioned to the court for guardianship when he found out how much life insurance his son had. And it has been a battle for years. It has been so horrible. And if they had just picked a guardian, the court would have gone with who they chose, as opposed to the court deciding, because they don't look at your ethics or your morals or your values. They don't care if you smoke or drink or swear like a sailor. They don't care if you're an atheist or if you're a Bible-thumping Christian. It doesn't matter to them one way or the other. They're going to pick as long as it's closest in blood relation and you're not a danger to children. Well, that's a pretty low standard as to whether you're a danger or not. So it's important you choose. I also encourage you to think about age. When you pick a guardian, this isn't a one and done kind of thing. I always joke that our biggest month for changes is January, and it's always after people have visited whoever they picked as guardian for Christmas, and they come back and say, okay, that's not happening. You know, they blamed my son for everything, and it was their daughter, you know, that sort of thing. So You can change it at any time. But when you think about the age of the guardian, because it's often your parents you want to pick, and that might be appropriate when they're young, but if you think about if your mom and dad are going to be in their 80s when your kid is 15 and doing stuff like my son is doing, are they going to have the stamina to run around and figure all that kind of stuff out? Geography. When they're little, geography may not matter as much. So when my kids were little, our guardian was in Montana. As they got older, it became apparent, you know, that if Chuck and I died, there is no way that we wanted our kids to not only lose their family, but to lose their church, to lose their friends, and to lose their high school. We just didn't want that. So we set up our estate plan to say that here's who we want as guardian, but we want you to move to San Diego. And if you're not willing, then here's our second choice, and we want you to be here. So how are we going to pay for that? Because we said in our estate plan, we want them to move to San Diego. We'll pay for relocation. We also want one of them to be home with our kids when our kids are home. So we'll pay for that, whatever the replacement salary cost is. And they get to live in our home for free. So our estate will pay for the mortgage, all expenses of the home. We want to set them up, and we want their kids to be able to have the same things our kids do. So if our kids get stuff, their kids get stuff. We put all that in our estate plan, but how do we afford that? Well, we did it with life insurance. So we figured out how much life insurance we need to accomplish exactly what we need done. And we only have 3 years left till our youngest one will be 18 and won't need a guardian. But it's comforting to know we have all of that in place, and we've talked to people about that. You might consider asking your kids. I would do this when they're a little older. It does kind of freak them out. I know I did that to my kids early on in life, and now they're used to it. But sometimes when you say, if something happened, you know, who would you want to live with? Because the first choice of our guardian, my son said, you know, I don't think I want Beth and Dwayne because they've got three little kids, and I'm always going to have to babysit. And he might have been right, you know, and so we started thinking a little bit more about that. So he had some insight into that. Also, I encourage you to ask the people you are considering, but don't tell them who's first and who's second. So I made that rookie mistake when I was a brand new attorney after Corey had been born. So it was about 19 years ago, and I didn't pick my sister, even though she loves my son as like he's her own. But at the time, I didn't know her husband very well, and I just didn't like his influence that much. So I put her second, and I put somebody else first. And then I told her she was second. Like, what was I thinking? Because it has forever stuck in her mind that I'm second, you know? And every time we're together for the holidays, well, I don't know, why don't you ask his first choice guardian? And she throws it at me. And there was no point in telling her, because most likely you're not going to die. And this will never come to fruition. It would have been much better if I would have just said, hey, we're picking guardians. Would you be willing to be a guardian? And I say, a guardian? Okay, they'll find out when I'm dead. I won't get any wrath all the rest of my life. So, but you should always have a first and second choice, because you never know what's going on in the life of the first choice. So our first choice for a long time was my husband's brother and his wife. And when their son was in high school, in college, he got testicular cancer. And here's another one of those little things that has nothing to do with estate planning. But if you have sons, you should check their testicles, and they should descend. And I'm so serious about this, because Tyson had one that didn't descend for about till he was about 7 years old. And they watched it and stuff, but the incidence, when you go back and look, it's like 90% that you're going to get testicular cancer if your testicles didn't descend. So make sure they're hanging down there, and talk to your boys about telling you about it. Because Tyson was so, like, he knew something was going on, he felt something weird down there, and he kept researching it on the internet, and it was like women's breasts. One might be bigger than another, and he felt one that kind of throbbed, and it always happened after he worked out and all that kind of stuff. And you know how it ultimately happened? He was in his second year at San Luis Obispo, and he couldn't even walk to class. He had to lay on a bench on his way to class. So he made his way home and told his roommates, I think something's wrong. You need to take me to the emergency room. So first they took him to Burger King, and they all got Whoppers, and then they dropped him off at the emergency room. Like, that's so boy-like. Like, would you guys ever drop your girlfriend at the emergency room and say, see ya? But anyway, he had testicular cancer that metastasized to his brain, his lungs, his back. And his parents got the same doctor that Lance Armstrong had, and I am so thrilled to say he's cancer-free today and through it all. But they were our guardians. And if we had died in the midst of that, there's no way they could have taken our kids while they're fighting for their own son's life. So that was a long way around. I'm going to relate it back to what I was talking to. But just one of the things you learn along the way is talk about that and be open. You know, my kids, both my boys talk to me about everything. And Chuck will say, you know, one of them will come in and he'll go, Mom, you know, something's going on with this testicle. Will you take a look at it? And Chuck is like, why did they talk to you about that? But I've made it so open that, you know, we talk about everything. Anything and everything is open discussion in our family. And so they feel free to come to me and they know, well, they'll hear the truth. So I encourage you to do that. It's awesome for them and for you. All right, but back to guardian. Don't let a court pick for you, okay? If what I'm saying today has you a little bothered, know that in California, we recognize what's called a holographic will, and it's a will done completely in your own handwriting, dated and signed. That's all you have to do is write it out, date it, and sign it. And your husband needs to do one too. You can't write it and have him sign yours. He has to write his own. But that's a valid will. And then be sure you put it somewhere where if something, God forbid, happened to you, it would see the light of day. Because if you're not going to pick your mom and dad, but they're the ones who are going to come and go through your house and find out you didn't pick them, but you picked your next door neighbor, that will may never show up. So just think about some of those things. Aren't I just full of sunshine and all kinds of... When people say, could there be anything worse? Oh, I've got like 15 of them. So the disadvantages to having just a will is only effective when you die. It does nothing for you if you're alive and incapacitated. So each year we get a number of calls about things like that. You know, and I'm going too slow. We get calls, basically, it's more about your grandparents. My grandmother fell, and she broke her hip, and she's incapacitated, and I need to pay her bills. I'm the executor of her will. The bank says I can't do anything. Well, that's because a will is only good if she dies. It does nothing while she's alive and incapacitated. So we have to go to court and get a conservatorship in that circumstance. It will always go through probate, so it's not fun. I'm going to skip these ownership of assets and just know that sometimes adding people on title with you is a poor alternative. And before you add people on to real estate, you should get advice because you can't undo it easily. And it's really easy to put people on. When we talk about incapacity, we're talking about who can make your medical decisions for you if you can't make them for yourself, and who can make your financial decisions. So just to kind of bring this point home, every person needs a financial power of attorney and a health care directive. It does not matter what your financial status is. We're on a huge campaign now for everyone that we know that has kids that are 18 or older. 6 years ago, my best friend's son went off to college, and he was involved in a rollover car accident, and one kid died at the scene, and he's brain injured. And when they got the call in the middle of the night, she got a call, and then her ex-husband, his father, they both rushed to Las Vegas where he was life-flighted, and then they couldn't agree on the course of treatment. And he was stabilized enough, so if it's emergent treatment, the hospital does it. But the next step, they couldn't agree, so we had to go to court and get a court order. If he had signed a health care directive giving his mom or dad the power to make medical decisions, then one of them would have had that power. But they didn't agree, and so we had to go to court. Then about 7 months later, when it came time to settle the lawsuit that happened and he was going to receive a large chunk of money, he can't settle that. Even though by this time he's 19 years old, that's an adult, he is brain injured. He is not comprehending what's going on. So again, we had to have a conservatorship to be able to handle finances. And if he had just signed a financial power of attorney, it would have taken care of it. But even just thinking about you, if you're married, you own everything pretty much jointly. So if one of you dies, the other one gets everything. If one of you is incapacitated, the other one can mostly handle everything. But you can't sell or refinance the house. because title's in both your names. And if one of you is alive but incapacitated, the other one can't just sign for you. So they would have to go to court to get a court order if they don't have a financial power of attorney for you. So just know these are crucial documents. Everyone should have one, a financial power and a medical directive. The medical directive, I don't mind if you do it yourself. You can Google it, Google Advanced Healthcare Directive, California, and pick one that you like that's free. Don't even pay $9.99 for it. So fill that out and make sure you have that on file. The financial power of attorney, we typically recommend that an attorney prepare it for you just simply because many financial institutions want to see that you were counseled by an attorney, that you understood what you were signing, because you are giving somebody the power to step into your shoes financially. And depending on how that document is drafted, I mean, somebody could come sell your house out from underneath you and you wouldn't even know it. We don't draft them like that, but that's a possibility. So you just want to be sure you have counsel on that. And typically, like our office, we charge $200 to do one of those. So just giving you perspective on cost. So a trust is kind of the cure-all for some of the things I was talking about earlier. And we are huge believers of trusts in our office. We try to counsel everyone where it's applicable to have a trust instead of a will as the foundation of their estate plan. A trust works just like a will. It says who you are and who the kids are, under what circumstances everyone inherits. What's different is that you transfer everything you own out of your individual name into the name of your trust. So Chuck and I, we have a trust, the Denherter Family Trust. Our home, if you go look at the deed, is recorded with the county recorder in the name of the Denherter Family Trust. Our bank accounts, checking, savings, money market, investment, all of our statements come to us in the name of the trust. Our checks still just say Chuck and Stacy, but the trust is who the statements come to. Things like IRAs, 401ks, our primary beneficiary is still my husband and I, but the secondary beneficiary is our trust. On our life insurance, the beneficiary is our trust. So everything we have is tied to that trust. We own the trust and we manage it. There's no one else who can mess with our life. You pay your taxes the same. But if you become incapacitated or die, first, if just one of you does, the other one can take over everything. No court order. But if both of you become incapacitated or die, you name what's called a successor trustee to manage everything. In a will, that's called an executor. In a trust, it's called a trustee. And that's who manages everything pursuant to your written instruction. So back to my original example, if you have a trust, we will avoid probate. And the reason is, if the home is owned by a trust now, you pass away, your backup trustee steps in and says, oh, the home goes to the kids. Well, the trustee now has authority to just sign a deed over and hand the kids a home. And we completely avoid the whole court process of probate by having a trust. It also covers issues of incapacity, not in every situation, so you still need a financial power of attorney, even if you have a trust. It covers all the what-ifs. So you might decide to do what we did. We set up our trust, so if Chuck and I die, everything's split into two equal buckets. First, we gave off the top because we wanted our kids to know how important for us it is for them to give. And so we gave off the top. Then everything was split into equal buckets. We said they could have anything they needed. The trustee could use it for their preschool through college, everything is covered. Then we said they get 10% when they get a bachelor's degree. We said they get another 20% when they get a master's, another 30 at a doctorate. No, I'm kidding. We didn't really do that. We did 10% at a bachelor's degree though. And then we did another third at 30 and the balance at 35. And for us, it was our way of doing a couple things. One was kind of manipulating our kids to go to college, because if they go, they're going to get that chunk, and if they don't, they're going to wait till 30 for their first distribution. And secondarily, it was to give them opportunities to make mistakes with their money, so they're not blowing it all at once. Hopefully with each distribution, they'll become better managers of what they've been given. That's kind of the big picture. You can cover all kinds of things in a trust. If you don't have children, we have plenty of people who their pets are their children, and we set up all kinds of pet trusts. We have people with beneficiaries that have substance abuse problems, that are hoarders. that have spending addictions, that the parents want to leave money to these adults, but they know it could destroy their lives. So there's ways to set that up to benefit them, but without putting all the money in their hands at once. If you have special needs children, there are special needs trusts to still qualify for public benefits, but really make sure that money is used for exactly the purposes you want. And blended families, where we've got his kids, her kids, our kids, this is a crucial kind of planning that needs to be done to make sure that when one person dies, it doesn't all go to the surviving spouse and an entire family get disinherited. I'm going to kind of skip how to keep your family from hating each other. There's a lot of things in there in the handout. I do want to encourage you, though, when you do your estate planning, I like to think of this is your last opportunity to leave a love letter. So, you know, we were hearing all about the bears today and just the stories of love and life. Well, the same thing with your estate plan. If you've ever read someone's will when they die, they're horrible to read. There is just nothing in them that is personal. It's very legalistic for the most part. So we encourage people to put more of their heart into their plan. So, for example, in my estate plan, we have a... Do I need to make an announcement yet? Everyone's good? Okay. And I'm talking on here. We have a section to our boys about the kind of person we hope they marry, and we put in all of our marriage advice of what we think it takes to make a good marriage and how you have to keep working on that constantly to make it alive and vibrant. There's a section about our money and how we've worked for our money and how we expect them to be good stewards of that. There's a section about our faith and why we have the faith we do and how we hope they don't lose theirs. And then there's just how you rocked our world. We love you, we love you, we love you. We'd rather everything we have burn and you two still have a relationship than for this to come between you. So that's what we wrote to our kids. We encourage all of our clients to do that. And some say, yeah, that's nice, I'm not going to, and others do it. But it really truly is your last opportunity to leave your heart to those. And I think your heart is more important than your money in the whole scheme of things. So I'd encourage you to consider doing that when you're doing your estate planning. All right, I'm going to skip past how you choose trustees. There's a lot of things in the handout that you can see. The three crucial documents everyone should have, so regardless of your financial status, everyone should have a financial power of attorney, an advance health care directive, and a will. If you have an estate, so when should you have a trust? My threshold of who should have a trust, if you have real estate in Southern California, you should have a trust. There's no other way to transfer it without going through probate on a second death except through a trust. If you have $150,000 in assets or more, you should have a trust. If you have young kids and you have life insurance, you should have a trust if you want to control. Now, a lot of people think, I'll just get life insurance and I'll name my mom as beneficiary and she can manage it for my kids. But what if 2 months after you die, your mom gets the life insurance and then she dies? Now it's going to, through your mom's estate. It's not going to your kids the way you thought it was going to. So you might as well get that set up so it's just foolproof and it works the way you want it to work. This is if you have a complete estate plan with a trust as a foundation, you would have not only a trust, but still a financial power, a healthcare directive. You'd have a type of will called a pour-over will, and then you'd be transferring your assets into the trust. How you find the right attorney? I know there's some estate planning attorneys in this room, so you've got some resources there. You should talk to somebody who practices only estate planning. So attend a free consultation. Almost all estate planning attorneys, until you get into the really big firms, offer a free consultation. And just make sure you can communicate with them and you feel like your values and worldview mix with theirs. It doesn't hurt at all to ask for references. Do they have a succession plan? And from this perspective, I just know there's a lot of attorneys out there that really don't have a succession plan, and so if you get this done and then your attorney goes away, you have to go find another attorney, so you're back in that same boat. So is there somebody that's going to take over their practice or have an internal succession? And you want to be sure they handle administration on death. So the last thing you want is to give your heart and all your information to a law firm that only does planning, and then if your spouse dies and you call them up and say, now what do I do? And they say, oh, we don't handle that, but here's three attorneys, give them a call and figure it out, right when you're grieving. So I think it should be a firm that handles both the upfront planning and the administration. And finally, don't be cheap. You do get what you pay for. I don't think it's something you should do yourself through LegalZoom. We have petitioned the court to modify those trusts, and it costs thousands and thousands of dollars to fix things people tried to do on their own. I would say if you're single, to pay for a good estate plan, you're probably going to be paying, and I'm just going to give general fees. These aren't necessarily our fees in our firm. But generally, if you're single, you're going to probably pay somewhere between $1,500 and $3,000 for a good estate plan. If you're married, it's going to be between $2,000 and $4,000. So it's expensive planning to do, but I can tell you it gives you such peace of mind. All right, I'm going to stop there. So I can open it up for questions, can I, for a couple minutes? Okay, yes. Okay.
Why they have to do a trust and the horrors of not doing a trust that I can show them?
We have information on our website, and I have a great article that if you email my office, I can email it to you. And it's an article out of AARP from 2001, so it's like 13 years old, but is like the best article that explains why you'd want a trust and not a will. So that's probably where I would send you. Yes.
I wanted to know if you take the time to set up an estate plan and then you move states, are they transferable to different states?
Yeah, or? That's a great question. They are. They're valid in all 50 states, but there's quirky things that go on in different states. So I always encourage people, if they relocate to another state and they intend to stay there, you should have it reviewed. There are only 7 community property states. So when you do an estate plan with your spouse here in California, it's one trust for you and your husband. If you go to 43 other states, they do a wife trust and a husband trust. And then you have to worry about how you do your assets. So they're not as savvy about why there would be a one single trust, but they will work with it. I've had lots of clients who've done that. But for example, in Florida, the reason O.J. Simpson moved there is because in Florida, your primary residence of any value is exempt from creditor claims. So he moved there and put all his money into his home. But if your home is owned by a trust, you lose that exemption. That's something you'd want to know, you know, especially if you're facing lawsuits and things like that. So it's good to see an attorney in the state that you move to.
Sorry, it's not a question, it's actually a comment. My husband is the benefits carrier in our family, and a couple years ago, we signed up for legal services through his company and paid $250 for the year. And then we went and got an attorney and set up a whole trust. So look into your benefit plans that whoever in your family carries, and you may be able to do the same thing. And we found someone who was a estate planner and specialized exactly like you do, and we got all this set up. So
great.
There are other options.
Yeah, that is a good idea. And the thing, too, that reminds me, when you get life insurance, if your employer will offer you life insurance, and so your spouse may think, well, I'll just add you onto my life insurance. The thing about that is if you terminate your employment, life insurance isn't a COBRA thing. It doesn't go with you. So if you get a terminal illness while you're working, and then you have to be disconnected from your job, you'll lose your life insurance. So it's important that you get life insurance with an outside carrier, not through your employment. Just take whatever they give you for free, unless you can't qualify otherwise. If you can't qualify otherwise because you have health issues and they've got group life insurance, then of course do that. But if you can qualify outside, don't use your employer's benefit to get group life insurance. Get it outside. Okay. Yes. Yes, so the question was, can you set up a trust without choosing guardians for your children because you and your husband can't agree? Absolutely, you can. That's just a separate piece. That's actually done inside the will. So you can handwrite your own will. And you can say, and if he doesn't do that, you get to win. Not really. Actually, you don't. That's not true. If you both died together, your guardian and your will would be admitted to probate, and then whoever's closest in blood relation to him, if they were petitioning for it, would be the battle. But, all right.
So, where should you keep all of these documents?
Right. So where should you keep these documents? And if you're worried about people finding them or even know they exist, we now electronically send copies to our clients so they have an electronic copy. I don't like people to give it to people, other people, because you may change your mind on who you want doing things. So in our firm, we tell you, just keep it somewhere home, at home, in your home office or whatever. They're too big to go into a safe deposit box. And then send a letter. We, in our office, we send letters to your successor trustees and guardians saying, you know, Sheila created an estate plan. She has the original. We have a complete copy. If anything ever happens to her and her original, please contact us. And that way they know it exists. They know where to contact, all that good stuff. So you can just send the card of your attorney or whatever, whoever will have a copy. And make sure your attorney keeps copies. I've been finding out that there's attorneys that don't keep copies. And that just blows my mind because I keep everything. So, but we call them, they say, no, after 5 years, we destroy everything. Well, that's awful. So, okay.
Why don't we do three more questions?
What happens if you have a living trust and then you have a new child? If it was drafted correctly, it'll say, I leave everything I have to my children. So whether you have one or you have seven, it's going to cover all of them without the necessity for amendment. It's just their name won't be listed in there, but that doesn't matter. It's whoever your children are. But if you said, I leave everything to Gracie, you need to amend your trust, because if you now have Gracie and Jason, we need to get Jason included. But usually your attorney will counsel you, let's just say we leave everything we have to our children. And I always ask my clients, do you think you'll have more? But if I know they're in childbearing years, I still won't just finalize it to the kids' names. It'll just be to our children. Okay? Did that answer it? Oh, blended families. If you have a blended family, then you definitely have to provide for how we're going to deal with blended families. And there's all kinds of ways to do that so that you don't have one family waiting for a stepmom to die just to get their inheritance, which I know sounds cynical of me to say that, but that's often what happens. So do we set it up so there's life insurance for those kids and they get paid off right away when that spouse, the parent dies, and then the rest of the estate is for the new family? There's all kinds of ways to design that so that we're not in a weird situation if someone dies. So you need good counsel for that, though. That's not a do-it-yourself one. Yes? So the question was, if I want to set up my estate plan and I want my parents involved and they have a trust, should our trust be managed by the same person or have the same people involved? And no, not necessarily. It really doesn't matter. Just make sure yours does what you want and theirs does what they want. But either one of you could change it at any time. And so yours is your own family. And on that note, I will say too, I think it's important you consider picking a different person for guardian than who you have as trustee. Because if you hand over your kids and your money to the same person, there's just so much room for unintended abuse of that money. And it's not that they're bad people, but we have had so many beneficiaries come to us and say, so my mom died, I was supposed to get this money, my uncle handled it, I'm in college now and he says there's no money. So we write to the uncle and say, give us an accounting. And he says, well, how do you think you had the swimming pool you had the whole, while you were growing up? And how do you think we went to Europe? And there's all kinds of reasons they justify that they spent the money, but it's all gone. So I think it's good to have checks and balances. Really consider that. Yeah. Right. How do you choose your trustee? There's a whole bunch of stuff to consider, but I would say, and are there rules they have to follow? Yes. But what if they don't? So what if your trustee takes all your money and goes to Viejas and blows it all in one night, and they're insolvent? we can sue them, but you can't get any money back. So you have to really be, you know, my big thing is don't pick anyone who's broke. Don't pick anyone who's living paycheck to paycheck, because it's just too hard for them to now suddenly have $1 million. It makes their life easier too. Voila. So the other thing you would consider, if you were incapacitated, if you and your husband were in an accident, for 2 years you were incapacitated. If this person stepped into your shoes and managed your life, when you recovered, would you have anything left? So really think about that. That's why you wouldn't pick your 18-year-old daughter, even though you think she's amazing, because she doesn't have the wherewithal probably to do that. So then you start considering professionals. There are banks, there are trust companies, there are attorneys that do it. There are private individuals who do it. So looking into that whole world of professional fiduciaries who are licensed, bonded, insured, so that if they do something wrong, at least there's a deep pocket that you get your money back. Anyone else? Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. Is that John Preston? Oh, it's a different one. Oh, he does that. And it's just an interesting, you know, more attorneys are because, you know, when you think about it as a business model, we have to constantly get new clients. So I think more and more are trying to think outside the box of ways, how do I make this more of an ongoing revenue stream? But that isn't common yet, that people do that. Oh, absolutely. So the thing is, you know, we as attorneys, we want to be your attorneys for life, but you never have to come back to us. You can go to any other attorney you want at any time. We just hope you'll come back to us because we offer such great service and have a relationship with you. But you can go to anyone else at any time, and if you don't pay his maintenance fees, he'll probably say, come pick up your file, and then you will, and move on to somebody else. Yeah. Okay? All right. Oh, one last one. Yeah.
You mentioned putting somebody else's name on a title. Does that have any impact on estate taxes?
Yes, it does. So she asked about putting somebody else's name on title. Does that have any impact on estate taxes? It has an impact on gift tax, property tax, income tax, estate tax. And there's one more. Every time somebody does it, I have to do an analysis of 5 taxes. Oh, documentary transfer tax. So it depends on who it is, whether all those apply. And estate tax, by the way, you can leave $5 million to your heirs right now, no estate tax. So between a husband and wife, you can leave a total of $10 million. So the majority of my clients aren't interested or aren't impacted by estate taxes now, but you still have gift tax issues when you add somebody on title and all those other taxes. So you want to be careful how you're doing it. Okay? All right.
Thank you so much, Stacy. Join me on the computer. And